Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is the Runner's World Podcast.
Welcome to the Runner's World Podcast with me, Rick Pearson.
And me, Ben Hobson.
Today we're speaking with Adarinand Finn. Adarinand is the author of books such as Running with the Kenyans and The Rise of the Ultra Runners. We speak with him about how running can prepare us for times of crisis. How you doing, Ben?
Hey, I'm all right, actually. Yeah, I'm feeling okay. I mean, I think the paranoia is setting in somewhat in terms of physical well-being. I think that every single thing that I feel now, I attribute to possibly becoming infected, which I think is probably how a lot of people feel, maybe.
Definitely, Ben. Yeah, I think anything that could be ordinarily put under kind of mild cold or a slight sniffle, yeah. Or I coughed once yesterday, you can start thinking, right, well, presumably that's me then. This is my descent into the COVID-19, you know, virus. But you're feeling generally all right though.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fine. I've, you know, apart from, yeah, as you say, like symptoms that you would think are not really are anything, but probably, you know, I'm absolutely fine. Like, I feel good. I've been out running and cycling and enjoying my social distancing correctly. And while we can, so, you know, I it's all fine. I just think that the biggest issue I'm probably having at the moment is the paranoia and the fear.
Well, I think a lot of people are in the same boat as that, mate. I think I definitely put myself in the kind of slightly heightened awareness of any possible illness. There's some interesting developments around my way. So Brockwell Park was in the news because it attracted 3,000 people on Saturday, and then Lambeth, the council decided that that meant that actually it should be shut on Sunday because people were, in its opinion, kind of flouting the social distancing rules. We've talked about this. We felt like probably something like this was going to happen, maybe not in Brockwell, but in other London parks. What's your take on that?
I think it's difficult because immediately in my head I've got images of the worst case scenario, which is, you know, gaggles of people amassing to have barbecues and to drink beers in the sunshine like any normal summer's day, and basically ruining it for everyone and being harbingers of doom and bringing death and disease upon us all. but you know, 3,000 people sounds like a lot. I think that in the state that we're in at the moment, that seems incredibly unwise and dangerous to have that number of people in a park. I'm going to say that obviously people behave to congregate. That sounds like I don't know. It's a metric that's difficult to sort of to comprehend because I don't really know anything about Brockwell Park. So it's kind of it's a tricky one. If someone said to me like, oh, there were 3,000 people on, you know, Hackney Marshes or Walthamstow Marshes or something like that, I can kind of almost see that you could probably have that many people in it be all right, people could listen to the rules and be distanced from each other. It doesn't sound like a smart thing to do, but I don't think it would break any protocol.
I think it's important to put these figures in context, isn't it? Because 3,000 people does sound like a lot. It is a lot, and I think Lambeth probably in this case was right to act because, in some senses, if people are just out sunbathing, the message that sends out not only to other Londoners but to people outside of London is that people aren't taking a very, very serious situation very seriously.
No,
but it was interesting. If you actually break down the figures, someone with a better sense of maths than myself has done this, but they said 3,000 people sounds like a lot, but Brockwell Park is 125 acres, basically. So that's basically 24 people per acre, which is roughly the same as if you were to sort of line up football teams at the start of a match. That's kind of 22 people in an acre, so it's roughly the same kind of distance as you'd have in that formation, if that's useful.
A football pitch is almost like an acre.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. And in Brockwell Park, if all 3,000 people turned up at the same time, which presumably they didn't, you'd have a density similar to players on a football pitch. And that's what that would be within the limits of, people keeping 2 meters apart. We've talked about this, but I think we just need to err on the side of caution, don't we? People are worried with good reason. And actually the message that it sends out is the wrong one. So shutting a park for a day, I think is all right. But I you do worry about people who don't have gardens. There's lots of high rise flats in Lambeth, and something like Brockwell Park and other parks are just like, they're an absolute lifeline for people. So, yeah.
No, yeah, I agree.
It's hard on that point.
It is hard. I read some interesting takes on this on Twitter. You know, like it's obviously if the circumstance was anything else but this, and it was a nice warm day and you didn't have a garden and there was some sort of thing going on, you could sort of make the rule of like, oh yeah. But if you go to a park and you don't adhere to these rules and you're mixing with people and you suddenly are contributing to the spread, that's no reason to go to a park.
Yeah, it's not a good enough reason. I think but yeah, my sympathy is with
100%.
People who've got young kids and yeah, and just a lack of green space. But yeah, yeah.
We moved into this house, we moved into our place a year and a bit ago, and we didn't have anything really outside before. Certainly not enough to entertain a toddler for the foreseeable future. And we have a bit of space now, and it's an absolute godsend. So like, I completely see both sides of it, from not having any to having some. Like it makes a huge difference. It's just very tricky to sort of like what could be something that causes a death, just because you want to go out in the sun. You know, we didn't go out. I spent yesterday painting the spare room. You know, a useful
you know how to live, Ben, don't you? You know how to live.
It's a nice warm day. Paint will set nicely when the weather's nice. Open the window, got the breeze through. It's a lovely job, I've got to say. So, you know, I use the time like that. And I'm not saying that's what everyone should do, because painting is quite boring. But, you know, it's such a hard topic to sort of get your head around, because everyone's just reacting as they feel they should at the time. And that's it.
Yes, yes. I guess the bigger worry here is that the closure of parks is a kind of precursor to the banning of outdoor exercise. I know that you've been on our Instagram page, and there's some people have been sort of expressing their worries about that as well.
Yeah. So we had a few people respond. Michelle Marsh said that my runs are keeping me sane. Catherine McNee added that running is so important, especially when normality has been turned upside down. But on a lighter note, commenting on the influx of new runners, another person commented that they were trying to get a T-shirt printed that said, "I was a runner before the virus," which I think is quite a nice touch.
Yeah, I think we should try and get a run of those, because, that is a positive thing, isn't it? That that more people now are seemingly running than ever, which is obviously something that we want to encourage. But yeah, I think now it really is a worry now, isn't it, that outdoor exercise is now something that could potentially be banned, hopefully only for a short period, or hopefully not at all. But
yesterday I can't remember how many days in a row, but certainly the death rate in Spain was dropping. Now, I don't know how long they've been on full lockdown for, but it's got to be 2 weeks or so. So it depends on, I guess, on the UK stats and how they behave, and how further measures might be needed. And obviously, full lockdown will work in terms of stopping the spread. So that's going to be something that is taken into account, I guess. I just think that, yeah, the new runners is fantastic. I mean, it's fantastic. It's like, you know, people are seeing the real merit in doing it. I kind of feel like part of the new part of the issue is that people who haven't run before are heading to the parks by default, perhaps, because they're not so... Like, you made a really good point the other day of you were running on A roads that were completely... You wouldn't have ever thought about running there before because they were empty.
Yeah.
And I've seen a few people on Twitter, of sort of experienced runners on Twitter, have been chatting about using their nuanced route-finding capabilities to sort of search out empty spots, basically, other roads, industrial estates, things like that. I don't think that's going to be in the mind of a new runner who wants to get out their house and just go explore. They're going to think, I'm going to go somewhere for a run that isn't awful, which, you know, like an empty industrial estate is, kind of.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with you that, like, they're the kind of the obvious, easiest sell, aren't they?
Yeah.
Like a nice green park. And even more so than that, the thing that frustrates me possibly more than that is runners just cleaving to paths, like particularly in the current weather. Like it's as nice or even nicer an experience to run off a path. And I think if actually something as simple as that would have taken some of the anger out of this debate early on, I think if runners were more prepared to move off the path. And I do think dog walkers can have a slight entitlement thing as well, of kind of walking two or three abreast on the path and being fairly oblivious to other public space users as well. So it's not just runners in this, but I do think, yeah, moving off the path is just one simple way to help here.
Yeah, for sure. I would just encourage all runners to be as imaginative as possible, I think, when it comes to their route mapping. You know, don't go for the ones that you've always done. Those routes are now null and void, because the chances are that there'll be busy spaces involved, or parks, or green bits. So think about, you know, those areas that you wouldn't have ever run before that might not be busy with traffic now. Or, you know, just, I found round by me actually the best, the places is a very small 1 mile loop in amongst the local streets. That's dead easy to avoid everyone. No one's walking around.
Right.
You know, it's all residential. You might see the old person, but crossing the road is the easiest thing to do. And then you just have a set mile that you just keep going round. And I've actually found that to be not as boring as I imagined it would be. And also a lot more calming. I've just removing the stress of like thinking that you're going to bump into people and how to react is actually, actually quite nice.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed. Hey, some good news here, Ben. I think it can feel insensitive, can't it, to look at some positives that have come out of this, you know, given like the death toll, and this is like a hugely tragic thing, also economically for people. But there are some good things that have come out as well, and I think it's important and right to acknowledge that. And one of those is, we were talking about pollution the other day, and someone, Annalise de Glanville, wrote in, said, I was listening to Rick talk about air quality the other day and thought I'd mention the Tenzing air quality measure you can add to Strava. It's only in London, I think. It's a collaboration between King's College Hospital and the sports drink Tenzing, but it measures the air quality of each of your runs. She signed up. She said, I live in East Dulwich, which is southeast London, and my local runs are usually between 70 to 90 on the air quality level, but ran at 8 a.m. the other morning and it dropped to 50. I'm not completely sure what these numbers apply to, but I should imagine that the higher the number, the more air pollution there is. So it's almost halved, basically, as a result of less people being out on the road. So I do think that air pollution is noticeably better in London. I'm sure true of other big cities as well. So you'd hope that maybe we can take some of these lessons away with us once this is over with, and say, actually, you know what? What were some of the positives that came out of this, and can we put these into practice now in better circumstances?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like, a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Shall we welcome our guest of the week?
Yes, let's do it.
Guest of the week. Here in the studio. Guest of the week. Sometimes on the phone. Could be an athlete. Could be a physio. Or a complete unknown.
Our guest this week is one of running's best-loved authors. His debut running with the Kenyans saw him travel to East Africa to learn from the world's greatest distance runners. And his latest book, The Rise of the Ultra Runners, explores the ecstasy and agony of running 100 miles. Here on the podcast to tell us more about how running can prepare you for times of crisis is Adaran and Finn. Hello.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How you doing? You all right?
Yeah, good.
So I wanted to speak, Adaran, today about, about a few things, but one of them would be about how running, and maybe particularly long distance running, can potentially prepare you for tricky times, and some of the skills that you learn maybe running 100 miles or running your best marathon, actually they're life skills as well as running skills, and actually they can help to sort of build resilience and perseverance. But just to sort of start with, how has the current crisis affected you? Obviously it's affected everyone differently, but as an author and a freelance writer, what impact has it had on you?
Yeah, well, so for a start, I live in Devon in the countryside, so it's quite a nice place to be stuck, which is nice. So because a lot of the tension I'm feeling online when I go online about runners getting a bad rep and all that kind of stuff seems to be happening in the cities where, so from a running point of view, I've been quite happy running around. I mean, I haven't been driving anywhere, but just from my house, there's all sorts of nice routes right from the front door. Mm. So that's been great. As an author, I mean, people are still reading books. I mean, one of the few things you can do in a lockdown is to order a book, buy it and read it. So, I mean, I've no idea how my book sales are going, but apparently generally book sales are doing quite well. So yeah. Hopefully people are buying mine as well. I mean, I've had some financial implications in that. I had quite a few speaking events coming up over the summer, which have been cancelled, and a few assignments I had. I was supposed to be actually in March running my first ultra marathon since I finished writing my book in China, of all places. So that obviously got cancelled, and that was, you know, for me that's work, so it's a job. So I'm having to kind of just be calm about that, stay centred. I mean, in some ways, in this lockdown, I'm spending a lot less money. I'm not travelling around so much. So you know, hopefully it all balances out in the end. So I'm spending a lot more time with my family.
Yeah,
which fortunately is a good thing. My kids have been dealing with this brilliantly. I've got two teenagers who have just been brilliant. They're doing a lot of cooking, a lot of painting, a lot of watching things on their phone as well. But you know, I've got to give them that space. We're trying to give each other enough space. Our house isn't huge, But yeah, generally, I mean, I'm in quite, in some ways, quite enjoying it at the moment. I mean, we're 2 weeks in. But to be honest, it's been quite a nice 2 weeks. The sun's been out. We've got a nice garden where we live.
Do you have a cockerel in that garden? There's something kind of going in the background. It's amazing.
So I told the cockerel, I just got someone to poke it so it would start making.
Well, I was also going to just say that you've got your running holiday business as well. How's that been affected? Because travel is, you know, as an industry, has taken a huge hit.
Yeah, that was probably my biggest stress. So at the point where the lockdown was being talked about, I had a running camp coming up in Dartmoor, and the stress about whether to postpone, to cancel that. In hindsight, there was no option. I had to cancel it because it was only last weekend, this weekend just gone, that it would have been. But say 4 weeks ago, it wasn't so obvious where we would be. Well, and I had this huge stress. Do I cancel it? You know, all these people are signed up. They paid me money. They're ready to come. And people were still, I kind of sent out a tentative email saying, you know, this is looking a bit dodgy. We might have to cancel this. And people were like, oh no, we really hope this is going on. I'm really looking forward to it. I've had my London Marathon canceled. You know, I really want to go on your camp. And I was finding that very stressful because suddenly my decisions were not just going to impact me, but also other people's plans. But in the end, we had to cancel it. But luckily, we've managed to move the date. The house which we rent, which was the big cost, have allowed us to move it to October. So hopefully by October, reconvene in Dartmoor and do it then. And I do have a few other things. Well, not luckily, I didn't have anything over the summer. So I've got another trip to Chamonix in September. So again, it's possibly going to be affected, but I'm hoping it might be. Of course, it's not a good time to be trying to advertise for people to come on those trips right now. It feels wrong to suddenly start saying, hey, I've got a trip in September in Chamonix, because people, because it, you know, it's still touch and go whether that's going to be, you know, who knows where we're going to be. But I did notice this morning the first tentative signs of the tiny, tiny inklings of good news out there with the death tolls in Italy and Spain and France and number of cases starting to fall, and talk about relaxation in the lockdown. So we'll see. I mean, nobody knows. It could be a second wave, who knows? But yeah, it's a big concern, and I have total sympathy for all those people who are much more invested in that business. I kind of do it as a thing on the side, but like race directors and any tourism, it's goodness me, there's a lot of people losing their livelihoods right now, and I'm kind of only partially affected, luckily.
In your recent book then, or the latest book, The Rise of the Ultra Runners, you talked a bit about having the right mindset for running 100 miles, and I wondered if you think that you can draw any parallels between that kind of mindset that you need in a long race like that, and the kind of mindset, or maybe some of the skills you need to get through a health crisis like this.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've been writing a blog, and it was funny when everything was shutting down, it felt so overwhelming, and I was getting so anxious, and everything was being cancelled, and it was like life and the world and the fabric of society as I knew it was shutting down so much. I actually wrote this line: this is not comparable to an ultra run because you know, people are dying. This is way worse. Mm. 2 weeks in, as I find myself kind of in this almost endurance test in a way, like, you know, and this very long, you know, we don't know, it could be another 2 weeks, could be another 2 months. Yeah. There are people talking about another year of this. I mean, hopefully that's not right, but, you know, nobody really knows. And so then you realize there is some kind of parallel with the ultra running, and that parallel is the one key bit of advice which I realized was crucial in ultra running, and which everybody gave me, but which seemed so too simple. At first, it seemed like too simple. It was like, okay, that's great advice, but it doesn't actually mean anything. And then by the end, you realize that is actually the essential truth of it all. And that is staying in the moment. And when you're running a race, the minute you start worrying about what's going to happen or how far you've got to go, particularly in a race, that's the thought you always have. Oh my God, I've still got like 50 miles to go. Mm. And that's the debilitating thought. And I realize now, 2 weeks in, as we go one day at a time, it's just like, you just have to stay in that day. You can't, the minute I start thinking about September, about my running camps, the minute I start worrying about, you know, when I can start rescheduling, you know, talks, and I start getting anxious. I mean, you've got to deal with that. You've got to deal with that, but you kind of not got to get fixated on that. In the same way with, in a running race, you have to be aware of how far you've got to go. You have to be able to manage your pace, but you can't become fixated on that. You've got to, your main focus has to be just right where you are. Just, you know, I'm just here. I'm just experiencing this moment. And because usually you're fine in that moment, particularly in an ultra run. Most of the time, you're actually running at a pace you can manage. It's the thought of having to keep that going for, you know, another 10, 20 hours that's the really difficult bit to deal with. So there is that parallel. It's maybe a small crumb of comfort, but I do find the longer this goes on, the more I start feeling, rather than it even being a conscious thought, but feeling this sense of, it's a bit like an ultra run. It's a bit like those races where I was in the middle of it and it seemed to be going on forever and the end wasn't in sight. And I just kept going, you just keep moving. In some ways, the middle sections can be quite nice in the race. Sometimes the beginning of the race is almost overwhelming because you've got so far to go. And it was a bit like that with this. I felt like as everything was shutting down and the reality of what was coming, that was almost the worst bit. Now we're in it. I feel like, okay, I do feel I'm in this kind of ticking over one day at a time. Just kind of fairly tranquil and relaxed about it all, really.
Yeah.
Even though you have been impacted financially, you know, I haven't been able to run as much, but at the same time, things could be a lot worse.
I completely agree with you on the I think the first, and I thought the same thing. Maybe the first week actually isn't going to be the easiest week, and then it's going to get much harder because it's just going on. But the first week's actually very traumatizing, very overwhelming, and actually this might, on some level, get easier. You might hit a rhythm with working from home and the new constraints we have to live by, and actually, then you might get a month that is relatively where you can see some enjoyment in the life that you're now having to live.
Yeah, and then I often wonder, because in a few of my races, even though I struggled at times during the races, quite often when I got to the finish, I was actually a little bit disappointed because I just got into this flow of being very much in the now, being very much at one with my movement and my sense of tiredness. Part of me wonders, I just started looking at the news today about, like, in Austria, they're going to relax the lockdown, and suddenly thinking, oh God, if tomorrow we just all went back to work and life returned to normal, I think there would be a part of me that would be a little bit disappointed, because I've just got to this point where I'm kind of dealing with it now, and I'm actually quite enjoying the fact that my horizons have narrowed. I'm kind of more focused on my family, on my immediate environment. And there's something quite nice about that I would kind of miss if we just suddenly had to go back.
So
it's just kind of strange.
It really is. I think runners as well, by sort of default, we are creatures of routine and rhythm. I think that's kind of the running itself has a nice rhythm to it, that we can, you know, mid-race, you settle into a rhythm and you find yourself finding solace in that rhythm, and training blocks are always based around routine and these sorts of stuff. So I think that sort of first adjustment to a new routine is when everyone feels a bit, you know, awkward, and this is definitely a big adjustment to a very different routine. But we're sort of, maybe we have a slightly inherent ability to just adapt to these new routines and then sort of go with it for as long as we can, because we're used to it.
And we're used to, and I guess as runners, we, you know, it's a solitary sport, so we're used to spending time by ourselves, with ourselves. So that's particularly ultra running. You can spend a lot of time by yourself, or in what feels like a very small world, in your own thoughts and peripheral vision. I was reading last night my chapter about running around the track, the 24-hour race around a running track, and that felt quite relevant in some way, in that, you know, everybody's running smaller loops than they normally do, but there can still be quite a sense of rhythm, and, like you say, kind of just being, it's kind of an experience still to be had within that. Not everything has to be running up mountains and running. Initially, I was missing, I live quite near Dartmoor, and I was missing going up to run on Dartmoor, but actually it's fine. You know, I'm really enjoying my daily runs around these areas. And actually, I've discovered all sorts of new trails within a few miles of my house that I never knew were there, which is quite amazing as well.
Do you think that your foray into ultra running that you talk about in the book has in some ways made you more resilient to other challenges? Do you think it's given you those kind of coping skills, or do you think it actually is best to look at as sort of its own separate thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think to some degree, I mean, I'm, and a couple of runners said this to me at the time, and I do feel like that, particularly when it's a physical thing. Mm. I mean, sometimes if it's like, you know, financial problems or, you know, relationships or something like that, maybe it's not relevant. But when there's this kind of a physical endurance being asked of you, which is almost what's happening now, this is becoming a bit of an endurance test. I feel like, yeah, I feel quite calm about that. I feel like, yeah, I spent 2 days running through the mountains. I'm just sitting at home in the garden. This is relatively easy. You know, and I do think, even though it's not necessarily, even I don't even necessarily, probably haven't had that conscious thought, I think it's just a sense that really, you know, I guess it's like people who've been complaining that people have been comparing this to the war when they're saying, well, you know, this is not, you know, you've just been asked to go home. This is not, you know, this is not difficult. And if you've been through a war, presumably this is nothing. And so, I mean, I'm not comparing an ultra race to being in a war, but there are certain experiences you've been through, once you've been through them, that do, you carry this sense of having this, knowing this sense of being asked to endure something and to cope with something that's quite difficult. And you just feel like, yeah, it's not, this is not such a big challenge. So personally, I think it's there. And like I say, initially, I think it was more the anxiety and the thought about what this meant and, you know, how many people were actually going to die. And was anyone I know in my family going to get it? Were my parents going to get it? And those thoughts, those concerns are making me very anxious. But now we're in it. Obviously, one of those things still might happen, but you can't spend your whole day worrying about these things that might or might not happen. Mm. And you just, you know, you just get into a rhythm. And so then that new challenge of just existing in a smaller world and for an amount of time, which you don't know how long that's going to go on. Yeah, I think I've definitely drawn some kind of strength, at least without being so conscious. I feel like, yeah, I've been here. I know what this is like. And I'm sure, you know, I'm sure all ultra runners would probably say the same, I imagine.
Well, I think a lot of ultra runners, if you look at the types of Kipchoge and Courtney Dalwater, Kylian Jornet and those guys, they all run with a smile on their face. So, you know, I think that when you're ultra running, and I don't know, I'm not an ultra runner, but you can sort of, these people who cover vast distances, it's staying positive is such an important part of staying in that situation and keeping positive. Do you think that's a sort of like a big plus of the whole thing, is the positivity?
Yeah, I mean, it's not even positivity, but definitely your state of mind plays a huge role in running, long distance running. And Eliud Kipchoge is always going on about, you know, this, he's only done what he's done because of his power of the mind. And obviously I look at that and go, well, you're also pretty physically just is my mind. I'm not sure I could run sub 2 hours for the marathon, but there is an element of truth in it as well, then, that, you know, your mind can really weaken you, it can really debilitate you. And if you're going to be a good runner, you can't do that with a mind that's going to tell you you can't do it, tell you you're too tired, tell you you're struggling, tell you this is terrible, tell you you're going to die, tell you you're never going to make it. All those thoughts, if they're going around in your head, you're not going to become a great runner. And I think those runners you all mentioned, they're all very positive, kind of light people. They seem to have a light outlook on life. They're not, you know, they don't seem like people from the outside, at least, who are very anxious. And I think that's, they have control. Eliud Kipchoge says you have to have control over your mind. Don't let your mind have control over you. And I think they're all people that don't let the mind take over. And I think to do an ultra run, of course, you're not working at their level that they're working at. But even to get to the finish of an ultra run, you also have to have that element of ability to quiet in your mind and say, okay, I'm in charge here. Just be quiet. And I think anyone who's got to the finish of an ultra marathon at whatever pace has gone through this point where the mind would have tried to stop them and tell them to quit. And the fact that they've got through that is you know, something that shows that they can do it. And, you know, they're in a similar situation here. I mean, some people obviously are in much worse situations than others. And, you know, there are some people in situations I can't really even begin to fathom, start with people they, you know, abusive relationships or people who, you know, completely lost everything. But for the majority of us, you know, it's just about staying calm. It's about letting the mind not rule us, not become completely overwhelmed by these negative thoughts, which are bound to be going around. And I think that's the parallel for me.
Yeah, and I think another adjective you could use to describe someone like Kipchoge would be patience. I think he seems like a very patient person. And I think that, I feel like with a crisis like this, with no obvious end point, that we all do need to be patient. And, we probably want this pandemic to pass as quickly as possible, but it may take months, or as you say, it may take, you know, some people are talking about a year, hopefully not. But I think that long distance running teaches you to be patient, actually, because you have to see the whole process and not, you know, not give up now because it's hurting. You have to say, okay, I'm going to stick with this. And I think actually that's a skill. I think patience now is a key skill to getting through this.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've been talking about ultra running, but obviously a marathon is still long, and still requires patience. And you know you can't even in a 10K. I mean, maybe a 5K is probably short enough. If you get impatient, you'll get there still. I'm kind of 10K up. There is an element of, you have to kind of bide your time and you have to kind of get into a rhythm. And the people who are really good at that, definitely patience is a key attribute. And again, that's all linked to the same things we were talking about. I mean, if your mind starts going crazy, you're going to not be patient. Patient is about being calm, is about being in control of your situation and of your emotions and your thoughts. He's the master, isn't he?
He's the master, no doubt.
He did once tell me that, I don't know if this is relevant, but it's such a nice quote, I'll drop it in anyway. I was asking, he'd beaten Kenenisa Bekele in the London Marathon, Bekele had run him pretty close, and about 2 miles to go, he'd finally dropped him. And I said, you know, how did you drop him? Because, you know, he's one of the greatest ever, and he was right on your heels. And he said, you don't drop anyone in a marathon. The pace drops them. You just keep running at that pace, keep maintaining that pace, and eventually they'll drop. And I don't know how relevant that is, but you don't drop anyone in a marathon like that. The pace drops them. And I guess it's those of us who can, you know, we've got to just stick with the pace, I guess, is maybe the message.
Yeah. You talked of, I think, to continue the chat on patience briefly and to get your take on a few of these incredible feats of running that people are doing in very, very small spaces, and how you think, and the sort of the resolve that people are showing to continue running whatever the measures, and sort of doing marathons on balconies and marathons in their back garden and things like that. I mean, that's a whole nother level.
Yeah, it's amazing. There's someone's climbed Everest up their staircase, and then there's the backyard ultra is ongoing at the moment. I think people are about 150 miles in. I don't know if you've seen that one where there were like 200 runners started, everyone doing it in their own, wherever they live. Some people are doing it on a treadmill in the basement. Other people are running around their block. And you have to run like 4.1 miles every hour. Then you get a rest. And then the next hour you go again. And they're just all these ways people are finding to keep running. Even, like you say, people who've been completely restricted to their house and are doing it on the balcony, or the guy was doing it around his kitchen table in China. It's just amazing. The urge to keep running is pretty powerful, obviously. I mean, I still wake up in the morning and I'm like, oh, do I really want to go for a run? And then you go for a run and you come back and you think, oh, why did I even think I didn't want to do that? But it's amazing. It always amazes me how people have such a strong urge to run, even, and that's been illustrated in these times. And I guess there's something a bit like the 24-hour running race around the running track. There's something kind of strangely, to me, I've always been slightly fascinated by these competitions which reduce everything down to a kind of microcosm. There's a, I talk about it in my book. There's a competition called Hand on a Hard Body in Texas, where everybody has to put their hand on this Nissan hard body truck, a pickup truck. And so there's 45 contestants. They all put their hand on the truck. And then the last one to take the hand off the truck wins the truck. And there's a brilliant documentary called Hands on a Hard Body. And it's just fascinating because they're not going anywhere. And it's an endurance test just of keeping your hand on a truck. But the experiences and the epic like insights and the wisdom that comes out of these people like 2-3 days into this competition and the highs and lows and the drama, it just shows that life, while it is amazing to go out and explore the world, there's a lot of life happening and can happen in a very small space as well. And as human beings, if we're stuck in that small space, we don't necessarily just have to give up. We can find ways of having those experiences. I'm fascinated by all these people doing these very, very big feats in small spaces. I'm quite tempted to try and think of a good one myself, especially if this goes on longer. Because
maybe we could do the unending podcast. The first person to to hang up. this is slightly off topic, but me and Ben were talking beforehand. There's a bit of a animosity between different sort of users of public space in London, partly because the parks are quite busy, and I think some dog walkers are accusing runners of having no spatial awareness, and vice versa. Do you sense that there is that kind of concerns where perhaps you have more space, like down in Devon, or do you think that this might be just a problem that affects sort of big cities?
I think that there's definitely an element of it here. I think a lot of it is about fear, and I've actually noticed it's got better over the 2 weeks. I felt like 2 weeks ago, I was a bit shocked actually, because my understanding was that you had to be next to somebody for 15 minutes before you even considered at risk of having caught, unless they cough on you or sneeze on you. So I was under the understanding that if someone ran by you, that was not an issue, that there was almost zero chance of getting the virus. And so I was amazed. People were jumping out of my way as I was running. I was like, whoa. And I wasn't very, I wasn't enjoying having that effect on people. And then I realized, oh God, I've got to slow down. I've got to give them the space, because people are scared. And I can tell people are scared of me. And that was really weird. I was like, oh my God, I'm just running, but people are scared of me. And so I can see that. And I imagine in London it's worse, because, there's more people in a smaller space. But what I've noticed is, I guess people have got used to the situation, and I found people are, I'm obviously now much more aware of it myself. So when I see somebody, if they've got their back to me, I'll slow down. I'll actually say, which before I would like kick the ground or cough, which I'm definitely not doing now, to let them my presence, because coughing's the worst thing you can do. But I'll just say, oh, excuse me, I'm just behind you. And they'll happily step to the side, and I'll go on the other side of the path. And I found people are, right now, yesterday I went for quite a long run, 9 mile run, long by some people's estimations. And nobody jumped. Everybody was quite calm as I came up to them, and they walked on one side and I walked on the other, and everybody said hello, everyone smiled. So I didn't get that sense. I almost felt like we'd found our place, whereas a few weeks ago, I think when it first happened and everyone was kind of a bit fearful, I could definitely sense it down here as well. But fortunately, it feels like it's improved. And so when I see these stories online about the kind of war between the walkers and the runners, it still unnerves me a bit. And I went out yesterday, I actually wore running gloves. I thought maybe that will illustrate to people that I'm being as careful as I can. I'm wearing gloves and everything, even when I'm running. Just not that I don't know if that actually helps, but just kind of illustrate that I'm being. But I found people were very friendly yesterday. I mean, it was Sunday. I don't know if that helps, but it was a nice day. I mean, this nice weather has made it tricky, because I actually live right on the edge of a small town, right in the countryside. And normally these trails that I run, you never see anybody there. And there's 10 times as many people out walking and running as well than there normally is. Now, there's still plenty of space, but it's still quite surprising to be coming upon so many people. But I think they've got used to the fact that who's using this space, and we've all just calmed down a little bit, is my feeling.
Well, if you like it, Aaron, we can include you on our T-shirt run of I was a runner before the virus that me and Ben are getting printed.
Yeah, I hear there's a big boom in running. Well, I still see more runners out. I realise, you know, there's a reason. Almost every lockdown in Japan, they're announcing a state of emergency lockdown, shop shut, blah, blah, blah. Only allowed out for essentials and daily exercise. And on one level, you think, daily exercise, is that essential? Why is every lockdown allowing people out to exercise? And I think it's because, you know, we need the population to stay healthy. Because, you know, if you get the virus, if you're healthy, you're going to fight it off better. That's my understanding anyway. And so I don't feel, because there's a sense when you read all this stuff online that maybe I shouldn't be running. It's not that essential for me to go out running. But actually, you know, I think you're probably helping more than you're hindering the situation by going out for a run. And I noticed the governor of New York, Andrew Cuomo, who's dealing with one of the worst situations in the world over the coronavirus. He was interviewed yesterday about what he's doing to, you know, personally, because obviously he, in his job, he's dealing with it. Personally, he said he's taken up running. And he's obviously saying that to kind of encourage people, because he's worried that people are going to get cabin fever, there's mental health issues. Also that if people do get cabin fever and mental health issues, then they're going to break the restrictions in other ways, which are less helpful. If you can get out for your daily run, you're keeping yourself sane, you're keeping yourself healthy, I think you're helping. You're definitely helping. I mean, you obviously try not to run too close to people, don't cough on people, don't spit. But I think people, in my experience, people are doing that. And maybe it took a week or two for that to happen.
Yeah.
Maybe people are still complaining about the thing that happened to them a week ago. But it feels like as people walking are now more accepting of me, I've obviously become more careful, more and more careful. And I think, yeah, I think it's important that runners don't get scared off and don't get the feeling that they shouldn't be running, because I think it's a really important thing that people do some kind of exercise. I mean, if you're not a runner, you're not a runner, you do something else. But I mean, then there are not many other things you can do though in this situation. So
So
I was a runner before, still a runner now. So that's.
And you'll be a runner when this is all over as well. And I hope many people who started off now will remain runners. I think that would be a lovely legacy of this, if actually it led to more people taking their health seriously. That'd be great.
Exactly. I mean, that could help. There are silver linings to all this. I mean, obviously it's a terrible thing, but if people discover they enjoy being outside, going for walks in the country as well, if people discover they like that and do that more often, that's great as well.
I don't know, do you have your own podcast as well? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I started that quite recently. The idea is, it's called The Way of the Runner, Conversations on Running with Darren and Finn. And in some ways, it's just this, the idea was it was kind of an extension of a lot of the interviews and meetings that I was doing when I was researching the books. I'd spend a lot of time talking to someone, getting some brilliant stories from them. But then I would... you know, I'd use one or two lines in the book, and I just thought, you know, well, I did wonder, does the world need another podcast? There are obviously a lot of podcasts, but I felt like I'd give it a go, and I've had some pretty interesting guests so far. I interviewed Ronnie O'Sullivan,
the player,
who is a surprisingly good runner. Not many people would realise that. 34-minute 10K runner, and wow. Which is not bad, huh?
And that's pretty good.
Beth Pascal, the ultra runner, and also Chrissy Wellington. I didn't actually realize quite how amazing she was. She never lost Ironman. She competed in, I think, 14 Ironmans, including 4 world championships, and won them all.
Wow. Yeah.
having come to the sport quite late, only discovered triathlon when she was about 29, did her first amateur triathlon. She's a lovely person. So it's called The Way of the Runner. Conversations on running. I'm sure people can find it if they put my name in a podcast thing. That's my current project at the moment. I'm not writing another book just yet, so that's what I'm up to.
Well, thank you so much for giving up the time to speak with us on the Runner's World podcast. It's great to chat to you about ultra running and life in general. So thank you very much.
Okay, brilliant. Well, nice to chat to you both.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast. A big thanks to our guest, Adarinand Finn, and to you, of course, for listening.
The Runner's World podcast is available on Acast, iTunes, and all of your favourite podcast apps. If you've enjoyed the episode, please give us a review and remember to tune in next week.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.